Our guest today is Dr. Dustin Sulak. Dustin is a traditional osteopathic physician, an expert in integrative medicine. His clinical practice in Maine focuses on treating refractory conditions in adults and children. Dr. Sulak is an internationally renowned expert in medical cannabis, the author of the Handbook of Cannabis for Clinicians, Principles and Practices, and co-founder of Healer, a medical cannabis education resource and products company. He serves on the board of directors for the Society of Cannabis Clinicians and is a passionate educator and leader in the medical cannabis field. Dustin is also a true CanMed veteran, having participated in every CanMed event dating back to our first conference at Harvard Medical School. He returns to CanMed 24 this year as one of the medical practicum instructors and an oral presenter presenting The Art and Science of Combining Cannabinoids for Treatment Success. During our conversation, we discuss what attendees can expect from the CanMed Medical Practicum, the expansion of available cannabinoids and how Dustin evaluates new options, which cannabinoid Dustin would choose if he could only use one to treat patients, the difference between acidic and neutral forms of cannabinoids, the process for combining cannabinoids, and challenging old assumptions about the benefits of combining CBD and THC. Before we get to my conversation with Dr. Sulak, I wanted to thank this episode's sponsor, Healer. Healer is a trusted physician-developed medical cannabis brand founded to address the challenges of helping patients and healthcare providers get the best results with safe, reliable dosing products and education on how to best use them. Healer's distinctive product formulations and educational material are based on the work of leading cannabis clinician, Dr. Dustin Sulak. Visit healer.com to learn more. Okay, and without any further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Dr. Dustin Sulak. Good afternoon, Dustin. Thanks so much for joining us on the podcast yet again.
My pleasure, Ben. Glad to be here.
Yeah, we are thrilled to have you back, not only on the podcast, but to have you back for CanMed 24. You know, I was rewatching your CanMed 23 presentation just this morning, and you mentioned how the event last year felt like a family working towards a common mission, which was so great to hear. We certainly feel that way. And we appreciate you being part of that family and playing such an important role in the event since the very beginning.
Well, thank you. I'm glad that you reminded me of that because it really did have that feeling. It was like a huge family on vacation together, learning together. There was just so much passion and collaboration and interest. It was a beautiful environment.
Excellent. And of course, you're returning again as one of the instructors for the medical practicum, which will be taking place on Monday, May 13th, which is a full day workshop. It's a bit of a crash course in cannabinoid medicine with you and Dr. Bonnie Goldstein, Eloise Thiessen, and new this year, Dr. Ethan Rousseau, which is quite the lineup. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to kind of talk about the value of the practicum for folks who might be interested in attending.
Sure. Yeah, we received so much good feedback on the practicum last year. And it's always a mixed crowd. You know, we've had some people in the audience that, you know, could potentially be up on stage helping teach, you know, experts with a lot of experience in cannabis medicine and, you know, all the way to clinicians that have never recommended cannabis to a patient before that just kind of like took the leap to come to CanMed to this event and everything in between. And it's really nice to get a mixed crowd like that, you know, so much relating and learning. I think the conversations that were going on in between the lectures were just fabulous, really exciting. And the feedback we got was great. So the practicum is soup to nuts, kind of you're a medical provider and you want to know about cannabis and how to get great results treating your patients with cannabis, know what the risks are, the contraindications, how to have a conversation about it with your patient, but also know how to think about it, like the physiology, the pharmacology, and we are able to pack that all into one day. Remarkably, there's always you know, a lot of, but it's just very concise. And I think that year after year, we've been able to refine it and get the curriculum to a point of what's most relevant to medical providers. And it's a, yeah, it's a great day. It's amazing that we get that much information across, also accepted and based on the feedback retained in just one day.
Yeah, no, and it's a great sort of prerequisite for the rest of the conference too. It gives you people a nice foundation to be for the rest of the presentations.
Absolutely. We actually had quite a few people that were not clinicians that came in and were also just thrilled that they had made the choice to do that, to attend the medical practicum. You know, even just some patients, and they're like, well, this was so much over my head, but it really, you know, like validated what I was thinking about. You know, there's people in the cannabis industry that are working on other aspects of the industry, not like the provider patient aspect of it. And so I think for them to, you know, get a glimpse into what's in our world, what's important to us, what we're thinking and talking about, it really validates and kind of, you know, solidifies their experience as part of this industry.
Of course. Yes. And so you're also going to be giving an oral presentation at CanMed 24. We've got you working hard. It's about the art and science of combining cannabinoids for treatment success. And before we get into sort of the benefits of combining cannabinoids, I wanted to ask you about just the sheer number of cannabinoids that are available now. And how has that sort of changed since you first started working in cannabis medicine?
Yeah, it's like we've known for since I started that this plant was a treasure chest of different medicinal compounds. But what we really had was THC. You know, I started in 2009 in Maine, and it was, you know, like sending letters to people on the West Coast asking if we could get some of these CBD. They weren't really even CBD dominant back then. It was like more like chemotype two varieties, mixed THC, CBD. There were a handful of them available. We really need these in Maine. We've heard this great stuff about CBD, you know, and then 2013, we finally had access to CBD and thought that was great. And thought we knew what we were talking about when it came to combining THC and CBD. There was this kind of, you know, somewhat limited black and white idea of what the combination does together that has persisted, and, you know, through now. But over the last, you know, 5 years or so, we've been working with therapeutically relevant amounts of THCA, CBDA, and CBG. These are, you know, the more prominent newcomers. CBN is in there as well. You know, there's some isomers and synthetics, which are worth talking about, even though I'm not sure they're that valuable clinically. Some of them probably have some value. But then there's the real mystery, which is the combination of them. You know, we can isolate them out and do preclinical rodent experiments and try to understand their pharmacology. But where the rubber meets the road in the clinic, you know, understanding how to make selections for what to treat patients with, and then how to interpret the response to those choices, how to kind of orient around dosing, and what are some of the general strategies when it comes to combining cannabinoids. This is, it's a whole new area of medicine that cannabis is kind of leaning us into. Like, maybe it's not new. There's this idea of polypharmacology or network pharmacology, using multiple agents with different mechanisms of action to get better results than relying on a single agent. That's not new, but it's just amazing how cannabis kind of mandates that we learn that and take that approach. And it's doing so more and more all the time.
And how is this, you know, kind of expansion of available compounds and different combinations, how has it made finding the right medicine more difficult for you and for patients and consumers?
Well, it's, yeah, so there's more options. Certainly can be more overwhelming if you don't have kind of a methodical way of sorting through it, which is what I'm hoping to convey in my presentation. And I think cannabis was already overwhelming to people, even when they just had, you know, few options. So now they, you know, for example, if they look at our medicinal products at Healer, you know, we've got all these different products, right? We try to make a chart for how they can sort through it, but it does get overwhelming for people. On the other side of it, though, what I think we're seeing as a benefit is that patients who may not have responded to cannabis, say we were just using THC and we really did our best to get THC to work for them and it didn't work, you know, instead of saying, okay, I guess, you know, you're one of these very few people that just doesn't respond well to cannabis and we better try something non-cannabis next. Now we have more things to try and things that from all that we know, these other options have a similar safety profile and have a similar capacity to help with this broad range of conditions. So it's not like we discovered a new cannabinoid that's perfect for just this one diagnosis. Here we go again with another compound that could work in all these different, you know, diagnoses, all these different fields of medicine. It just adds to the complexity. And until we, you know, I think until we get like supercomputers working on this problem where, you know, human beings are going to be the best one to kind of determine where are we going to start? What are we going to try next? What's it going to take for us to decide this really isn't the right fit for you before we move on? These are the basic questions that I'm hoping to help clinicians answer.
Excellent. And now you mentioned healer.com and I'm glad you did, because I kind of wanted to ask you, what is your process for adding new products that, like new cannabinoids into your portfolio?
Yeah, we got a big pipeline. You know, the wish list is big. We have prototypes. And so, you know, things that I find interesting based on preclinical literature, based on what people are telling me, we usually make a prototype and share it around with the staff and with myself and some of our colleagues and see what people think. You know, a good example of this is our newest product still. It's a combination of CBDA and CBGA. So CBGA, like who knows anything about CBGA? You look in the peer-reviewed literature, there's so little on it. You know, a few more hits just this past year, but is it similar to CBG, which we also don't know that much about, but we know more. Is it different than CBG? You know, a lot of unknowns there, but there was this, a preclinical study that gained a lot of headlines about how it could inhibit the SARS-CoV-2 virus in its infectious potential in mice and in cells. And so we thought, well, you know, we've seen such impressive results with the acidic cannabinoids, the THCA and the CBDA. It kind of makes sense for us to explore CBGA next. Let's see what it does. We started playing around with it, and we found that in combination with CBDA, it seemed to be doing something special. We weren't testing it against SARS, like against COVID. We were just taking it and see how we felt. And people were reporting very similar things, that this combination made them feel alert, awake, focused, like in the zone, resilient to stress. You know, I didn't expect that. I still don't exactly know what's the mechanism of action. But enough of us felt like, well, this is a prototype worth bringing to market, that, you know, that's what we did. And we still have so much to learn from it. You know, I mean, even CBG, I knew it had a lot of potential. What do we know about it in humans right now, other than the anecdotes? Almost nothing, right? There's one survey study, and the people in that study weren't, you know, the data is just not very clear. Like, it's a good starting point, but we don't know exactly how much most of them were taking or what other, you know, cannabinoids they were taking it for. And so because of that, we currently have an ongoing, another survey of CBG users to try to clarify that. But what it seems like, you get something that's a hit in a small number of people. You allow other kind of cannabis enthusiasts to start using it. And then before too long, we've got some signals that are worth following. Then we do the observational research. We kind of confirm what we think we're seeing. And then, you know, maybe that leads to more clinical trials or more animal research. It's, you know, it's so backwards with cannabis that we start with humans and then we go to the road at least after that. Right. But I love it. I love it. So that's kind of our process. And then also the idea that we just don't want to have too many products. Like it does get confusing and overwhelming, and there can be kind of a downside where if people are, you know, just looking at it and not sure what to take, or there's no good algorithm for helping them make a selection, then they might make the wrong selection and kind of rule out cannabis, say, oh, I tried it, this doesn't work for me, I'm not going to try anymore. So there's pros and cons of everything in life.
Yeah, no, and I kind of, from a personal standpoint, my mom has been dealing with some back pain, and she's done physical therapy and some things doesn't really seem to be working. And I was like, "Well, have you tried cannabis?" And she was like, "Well, what do I get?" And that's where I was like, "Well, I don't know. I mean, is it THC, THCA, CBD, CBDA, a combination? It can be a bit overwhelming."
And that's where, that's where I'm hoping to train clinicians to do that. But it sounds like, so say we take someone like your mom with back pain, maybe it's not a very complex case, right? Maybe I would get her in the office and ask her a bunch of questions. And in the end, she's just a lady with, some like intermittent back pain. There was no big injury. I'm not worried about any kind of like, spinal stenosis or anything like that. She's got a sore back and she did her FPT and her exercise is not working. What can I use for pain? I'm going to have a very few number of questions that I'm going to need to know where to get her started. This is not going to be rocket science. Just to use this as an example for our audience today, one question is going to be, is the back pain disturbing your sleep? Or is your sleep disturbed for some other reason? And if it is, to me, that is the low-hanging fruit. If you can get somebody sleeping better, it's very likely their next day is going to be better. It's very likely their healing system is going to take over and fix the underlying cause of the problem. And in my mind, in my experience, THC is still the winner when it comes to improving sleep in just about anyone, but certainly in anyone whose sleep is disturbed by either pain or anxiety, especially trauma-related anxiety. We'll start with THC. Maybe your mom's never tried cannabis before, so I'm talking to her. I have no clue if she's going to be a 2 milligram person or a 20 milligram person. And because of that, I'm going to start her at 2 and very gradually work up, see if she's a responder when it comes to sleep. And then if she is, we'll say, okay, let's watch for a month or two, see if your daytime symptoms resolve. If they don't, come on back and let's talk about step two. How do we treat you during the day? That's just kind of my clinical approach, which I think doesn't have to be exclusively clinical. I do think through education, we can bring that to the consumer and they can kind of skip the clinician and get good results with the right information. That's my hope.
Yeah, no, and it really seems like it's a process of, trying something for a period of time, really checking in with yourself, seeing how that's working, and then adjusting accordingly.
Yep. But how do you shooting from the hip and trying the right thing? Because they're different personalities too, right? Maybe your mom's someone that loves doing things methodically, or maybe she's someone that, like, if it's not going to show her something, some improvement within 4 days, she's done,
Yeah.
And that's kind of the art in medicine is like figuring out which patient is which and how aggressive we need to be at the beginning. But I will say, all these new cannabinoids are great. They do not replace THC. Not one of them. THC is still such a powerful agent. If I could only choose one to work with, that would certainly still be it.
Interesting. So yeah, that's good, and that's a good segue because one of the things I was going to sort of ask about is, after we're talking about the variety of cannabinoids, sort of narrowing things down a bit. And am I correct in assuming that, well, you've already confirmed that, THC being kind of one of the most well-studied, widely available, would you also put CBD and potentially CBG in sort of that category of sort of the maybe most effective cannabinoids? Or most well-known cannabinoids, at least right now.
Well known for sure, but I think if I, what I said about THC before, if I could only have one, what would it be? I think if the offering was for me to only have two, if it was THC and the second best, what would that be? At this point, I think I would choose CBDA over CBD. It seems to me in most people to do just about everything that CBD does, but to do so more powerfully and at a lower dose. It's not perfect. What I just said does not apply to everyone. There's some people that try both and then go back to CBD, but the vast majority will try both and say, wow, the CBDA actually worked a lot better. I'm going to stick with CBDA. And we know that at Healer, we offered CBDA samples to our CBD customers, and most of them switched over.
I will confess, not confess, but disclose I am a CBDA user of Healer. So
Okay.
I'm a believer.
You like it too. And then CBG, you know, I'm still figuring it out. It certainly seems powerful. Like it sells well. People get it and then they want to get it again. They think that it's helping them. I've seen some remarkable results clinically, you know, not with everyone that tries it. I'd say a lot of people, it's more similar to a CBD-ish response. We're like, yeah, I tried the CBG. It's helping me. I like it. It's not like, oh my God, you changed my life. I feel like myself again. I've returned to work from being disabled. Like those are the stories that we hear about with THC. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't get that much of that with CBG, except once in a while I do hear something that's pretty profound.
Interesting. And now, so you mentioned CBD versus CBDA. In that scenario, do they have similar kind of therapeutic or, you know, similar effects? Because I know that in some cases, the neutral versus the acid, they actually have opposite effects.
Right. So many of the targets of CBD and CBDA are the same. They're very similar. And so, yeah, if you look at THC versus THCA and compare their pharmacology in the body, very different. And when people take them, they feel very different. CBD versus CBDA is much more similar. And so probably, you know, one of the targets that's going to be most important for people that are using this is the activity of the serotonin receptor. So they both can kind of reduce anxiety and improve mood via that serotonin pathway. There's been a number of animal studies looking at the two, sometimes not in the same study, but two different studies that have used the same model to evaluate CBDA versus CBD. And you'll see that they can do the same thing. They both can reduce seizures. They both can decrease inflammatory pain. They both can decrease nausea and vomiting. You know, there's a lot of overlap there. Mechanistically, it's usually the same target. The way in which they're achieving these outcomes is the same. But the dosing is often vastly different, with CBDA requiring a much lower dose, suggesting it has what we know from the animal studies is that it has both better bioavailability. So take a dose, more of it's getting into the body. And then it also has more potency once it's in the body. You know, if you look at brain levels or blood levels of these compounds that are necessary to achieve their result, you need much less of it. So more gets in and you need much less. Maybe one of the downsides is that CBD seems to last longer in the body. CBDA, you'll excrete more quickly. You might therefore have to take it more often. But a lot of overlap there.
Yeah, and then kind of one of the nuggets that I picked up watching your presentation from last year was you showed some graphs showing that CBDA is actually better absorbed when it's part of a full plant extract.
There's findings in rodents. You know, we haven't proven that for humans yet, but based on what we're seeing, when people say, you know, we're taking these low doses and they're working really well, and then there is a human study that showed CBDA absorption through the gut was extremely high. It didn't test it like it did in the rodent study on its own versus in the context of a whole plant extract. But all the information we have is pointing to what you said, that essentially if there's a little bit of THC or CBG present with the CBDA, you might absorb it, or at least a rodent might absorb like 15 times more of it with just a little bit of THC or CBG. None of us would have planned that, but I think a lot of us would have said, there is a pretty good chance that for one reason or another, taking this thing in the context of the whole plant is going to beat taking the isolated compound. You know, and that's just the lesson we've learned again and again and again. There's going to be exceptions to that lesson, you know, in certain situations, but typically that is the case. And once in a while, we know why that's the case. This is one of those scenarios where we think we know why that's the case.
Right. And that speaks to the topic at hand here, right? This combining cannabinoids for success.
Yes. So, you know, in the presentation, we go through what we know about the pharmacokinetics. So this is how do drugs or compounds interact with each other as they're getting absorbed, as they're getting metabolized, and as they're getting excreted. And we have quite a bit of information about these various cannabinoids and what some different combinations will do pharmacokinetically when they're in each other's presence. So that's kind of one chunk of what I'm presenting. And then another aspect of it would be the pharmacodynamic interactions. So these are not about absorption and metabolism, but about how they actually act, their mechanism of action, their pharmacology. And that when these two are present, you might see one thing compared to when they're on their own. And then, strategy. So there's the pharmacokinetics, the pharmacodynamics, and then strategies for both clinicians and patients about how are we going to sort through this? Like, what's step one? What's right. step two? How do we combine things? So that's the main content in our presentation, in my presentation.
Excellent. No, and kind of the process I'm very interested in, like, is it better to, I'm sure it's always dependent on the person and the condition, but, you know, is it better to start with a combination and then, you know, maybe zero in on maybe a single compound, or is it better to start with one and then start adding things in? Sort of how does that work?
Yeah, it depends on some factors, but I am very comfortable starting with combinations and more simple cases. Like if you just told me what you told me about your mom, and I started saying, Ben, you know, like, tell me, does it radiate down her leg? I don't know. Does it disturb her sleep? I don't know. You know, like, I couldn't get any more information out of it. What would I do? Yes, I'd start her with a combination. I'd probably recommend our formula that's like equal parts THC, CBD, CBDA, and THCA. You know, it's got like, we call it the balance formula. So it's only 1/4 THC. It's, you know, not too strong. It's easy for people to titrate in small increments. It's literally made from 19 different varieties. You know, it's a huge shotgun approach. Would I take that shotgun approach as my first line with someone? Absolutely. I've done it plenty of times. It works well. No problem with that. If it's a more sensitive case, maybe it's someone who's already tried cannabis and hasn't really succeeded, or has a history of being ultra sensitive to cannabis, or it's a high stakes case where it's like, we got to get results fast, or this person's going south, or their families, you know, this person's going to have to be institutionalized or whatever, you know, if there's some urgency there, I might not just start with the shotgun approach. I might take a really kind of accelerated and targeted approach. But a lot of times I do what we talked about before, like, I'll treat the sleep problem with THC, and then they'll come back and say, like, yeah, I guess I got a few little remaining things, but the bulk of what I came to you for is fixed. Or I'll start with a balanced formula, kind of a shotgun approach, and they'll say, you know what, that works really well. And I might say, well, you know, is there some room for fine tuning it? Are you having any other symptoms? And maybe we do a little fine tuning, but a lot of times that's not even needed. So yes, short answer to your question is sometimes a combination is a fine place to start, and that's good enough for a lot of people.
Excellent. And now, you hinted at something earlier, and I know I read it in your abstract too, and I wanted to make sure I asked you about it, was that there's some new research challenging some old assumptions about the effects of combining THC and CBD. Hoping you might elaborate a little bit on that.
Sure. Yeah, the kind of old adage of CBD is going to mitigate the side effects of THC while augmenting the benefits of THC. There is definitely some truth there. We've seen, you know, the product Sativex, designed by Ethan Russo, you know, which combined the THC and the CBD in roughly equal proportions. And that's been very successful. It's helped a lot of people. So while there is some truth to that statement, there's a lot of nuance. And there are many situations that I've seen and that we are now seeing in human clinical research where that is just not the case. Where adding CBD to THC does not mitigate the side effects. It can actually enhance the side effects, and it may dampen the benefits in certain cases. So, like one example would be a study of people with fibromyalgia who have vaporized either THC dominant or combined THC CBD cannabis. They rate how it affects their pain. You know, it's blinded. They rate how it affects their pain, and they have their blood levels measured to see, you know, how much THC and CBD in the blood are needed to achieve these reductions in pain. Well, it turned out, based on the results of that study, that the presence of CBD in the flower and in the blood actually limited THC's ability to treat the pain. You know, we know mechanistically that THC stimulates the CB1 receptor and CBD turns down the activity of the CB1 receptor a little bit. Mm. And it's kind of arrogant to think like the only way in which it's going to turn down that activity has to do with negative side effects, but turning down that activity is never going to bother the positive effects. No, like, physiology doesn't work like that. I mean, maybe sometimes it does, but there is evidence. So I think that's a big, like, you know, people love grabbing onto things in cannabis and running with them. I'm guilty of this also. You know, we all think like, oh, myrcene means it's sedating. No, myrcene means a lot of things, you know, if it's present, you know, or like, you know, probably even worse than that is the whole CBN story that people are going for right now. Like, CBN is valuable. It's naturally occurring. It's very similar to THC. I'm not putting it down. You know, what I might put down is like dirty CBN that's been manufactured in a way that might not be safe. But CBN itself, you know, there's a couple studies from like the early 80s that, you know, showed some people got sedated and maybe some rodents got sedated when taking it. You know, they get sedated with THC too. But all of a sudden, that little bit of information turned into, wow, CBN is the best for sleep.
Right.
And it's like, it's totally not. I mean, for some people, it is. Some people have really more paradoxical reactions to CBN than they do to THC, and it wakes them up. Oh, wow. It's less potent than THC, so you're going to need a little more of it. But in the end, it's very similar. So, yeah, try to keep it real. Like, I'm you know, also a victim of that kind of thinking sometimes. You know, like I take what I think I know and run with it, and maybe I don't question it enough. But as a kind of a leader and educator in this industry, I really periodically like to look at all of those assumptions and challenge them. And you know, the challenge on that CBD THC combination, there's a lot of data to suggest it is not that simple, and sometimes it might do the opposite of what we hope.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think we're all sort of guilty of that, especially in this industry where we're learning. And, you know, to keep saying, well, it depends, is a little exhausting. So when we could kind of grab onto something as a bit of an absolute, we do. But again, it depends.
Absolutely.
All right, Dustin, I do want to be mindful of your time, but before I let you go, I want to give you the opportunity to share any additional resources related to some of the topics we discussed or that your presentation that you're going to be giving. And then, of course, any other information about you or Healer, links that I can put in the show description, please let me know.
Okay. Yeah. So the topics that we discussed, this is like me pulling together a bunch of threads that I typically cover every month, you know, individually on the Healer webinar. So what I do with these free webinars every month is go over usually 5 or 6 different research studies that have come out recently that I think are interesting or clinically relevant. And so that keeps me on top of the literature, and it also keeps my audience up to date with what's new. And then I, you know, what I've done with this presentation is kind of zoom out and say, like, over the last 2 or 3 years, what have I learned about combining cannabinoids? How's that affected my clinical practice? And can I synthesize this for an audience in a concise way? But for people that are excited to be kind of like the first to know and on the front lines, please check out healer.com. You'll find a tab there for webinars. The webinars are free. Anyone can join them, and they happen every month. Not going to happen in March, though, because I'm having a baby, so I'm taking 1 month off. But we have a lot of other resources on healer.com, dosage programs. You know, if it weren't you, Ben, someone that knows a lot about cannabis, but if it were someone else asking me about their mom, I'd say, you know, just send her to healer.com, tell her to go through the program called New to Cannabis, you know, how to get started. And I think by the end of that, she'll have a lot more confidence and a lot more understanding of the basics without needing to become an expert. And what else? The other thing I would just like to say is I would love people listening to this to find this conversation interesting to come to CanMed. It's just a beautiful experience, and I want to be there with you on the beach in the lecture hall. You know, I'd like as many of the right people who are truly interested and inspired in this field to show up. So please consider it. It'll be worth every penny. It's such a beautiful event.
It is. And again, we're so happy to have you be a part of it this year and for all the years and all the support over the years. We so much appreciate it. All right, Dustin, thanks again for doing it. Congratulations on the incoming baby, and we'll see you down in Florida in May.
Great. Thank you, Ben. See you soon.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Dr. Dustin Sulak. Check out the links in the show description to learn more about the topics we discussed. And thanks again to this episode's sponsor, Healer.com. Our next episode drops March 20th. That's 2 weeks from today. In the meantime, go to canmedevents.com to check out all the details related to CanMed 24. Speakers, poster presenters, networking events, panels, workshops, meals, and more. All the information is there. While you're at canmedevents.com, sign up for email alerts so you don't miss any announcements before the event. If you are planning to join us in Florida this May, register for your ticket package now. Space is limited and tickets are going fast. I also invite you to follow us on social media. We are on LinkedIn, Instagram, X, and Facebook. Just search for CanMed Events. And lastly, please rate, review, and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. All right, that's it from us. Stay safe, stay healthy, and be sure to join us for the next CanMed Coffee Talk.